And now, a moment from the Movie Geeks United Archive.
You know what? I hate to say it, but I actually really like Hudson Hawk.
I knew you were going to say that. I hate that you said
it. I really do. I liked it when it first came out. I thought, what a clever idea. You know, they're timing their heist with a standard song. You know, they know they have, it's cheesy, but I thought it worked.
It's better than Perfect Stranger, I'll give you that.
I can understand that just from the previews. and you and Chris actually share a disdain for Giovanni Ribisi.
I really do. Yeah, you know, he's got the acting talent of a roof shingle, basically. You know, I mean, every time it's the same performance. You know, you want, thank you. You want the weirdo, little chubby guy that brings a little mystery to the role and overacts it every time, you go get Giovanni Ribisi. It's just boring every time out. I've never seen a reason that he should be making movies. And let me tell you something. Perfect Stranger is everything that you just described.
Chris, we got a minute left, and I got to cover what's coming up in the next show. But can you do a little Giovanni Ribisi in Boiler Room?
Oh, sure. That's the scene where he's talking to his dad. He's talking about his leg injury.
Yes.
He says,
"Just my leg. My leg was broken. Dad, I'm sorry." He sounds like Jerry Lewis, does he?
He sure does. It does. Horrible.
Welcome to the show tonight. It's Movie Geeks United, our midweek edition. Tonight we're going to review all the latest movie headlines that matter and maybe throw in some movie reviews here and there. Whatever comes up, we're open. Aren't we all open, guys?
Yeah,
yes.
We are. What determines whether what matters exactly?
I don't know. It's not like the news will necessarily change your life or, you know.
Right. No, that's
it's not
going to
fix the economy, the news that we're discussing.
Well, Gallo, no, please, let's not go there, please. Thank you.
Yeah. But that top clip, that archive clip, was actually from our very first show in April 2007. I was listening to that premiere episode last night, and I was thinking, you know, we were so green. It was an entertaining show. We had a lot of callers, but I was thinking, are we going to listen to these shows 5 years from now and kind of be wincing here and there, thinking,
yeah,
you know?
Well, it was
really
funny. You know,
it pointed out
what we all suspected, which was that Giovanni Ribisi is a real bore.
Yeah.
My leg!
I always felt that scene, like, that's the movie where I really just couldn't stand him, that Boiler Room. You just wanted to punch him, I mean.
Yes. And then he shows up in something like, what's the Mark Wahlberg thing that he just did?
Contraband. Contraband.
Yeah, and he plays, like, the sleaziest scumbag you could possibly imagine. And
yeah.
He brings some color to that movie, at least, you know. Some kind of color.
I remember sort of liking him in Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow. Remember him in that?
That was a good... That's actually... I thought that was a decent movie. I mean, you know...
Yeah. Unsung. Underrated.
Well, the making...
But,
we haven't heard about the making of that on our show, actually. We talked about that.
Yeah. Speaking of underrated, you know, last week when we convened near the end of the show, we talked about the rumor of a Heaven's Gate Criterion, and
November.
Yeah, it's been confirmed.
Yep. Let me put on Amazon.com wish list.
Absolutely, but that's an exciting release. Actually, Criterion's got Rosemary's Baby, Sunday Bloody Sunday, The Game,
and Weekend.
Weekend, Godard, and the new Weekend. There's a new Weekend too.
Yeah. I want to see. Right. I want to see that one.
Yeah. I'm just afraid that since there are two movies, I'm going to have to save one for a weekday. I don't know. But so it's an exciting lineup of movies. But Criterion supervised kind of the remaster of this thing, and they're premiering it at Venice, I believe, with Cimino in attendance. And that's prior to the Blu-ray release. Cimino does not do commentary on the Blu-ray, but he does do an audio interview segment, I guess.
Right.
Because he doesn't want to be seen.
Now, let's talk about that for a second. I don't want to be seen about where there was some kind of rumor that he was now living as a woman or something. But then somebody, I read this on the internet, of course, that bastion of great information. And then somebody came and said, well, no, I got to correct you. He's just had a lot of plastic surgery done, and he doesn't like the way he looks now.
Obviously. He's going to be at Venice this year, so we're going to get a look at him again, unless he's dressed up like Michael Jackson when he took his kids shopping or something. But
a couple
of years ago, he was a can, and he was photographed, and he looked like a China doll or something. He looked very strange, very different from the 80s Cimino that we know.
Yeah, well, he was at a party, an Oscar party a couple of years ago for Inglourious Basterds, and he was talking to Tarantino. I remember reading that. And that was the last I had heard of him. But I think this is awesome news because this is a movie that deserves, like, the ultimate edition to be seen and fully appreciated. So I can't wait to get it.
Well, this is my question. Is it an underrated masterpiece? Would you go that far? Or would you just go to say it's a decent enough movie?
Misunderstood. I mean, I don't think it's worthy. I've got to be honest, I've never seen this version. I've seen, I guess you would say, the butchered versions of this. I've never seen it. But there's obviously something there.
Well, I've seen the longer version.
Well, how would you describe it? Would you say it's an underrated masterpiece?
It is. It's underrated. It's a flawed masterpiece. Let's put it that way. It's flawed. I mean, it does get confusing at times. And sometimes it's hard to tell which characters are which, you know. And I'm talking about the, you know, non-star characters. But and it does get a little bit, you know, muddled at times. But it's always beautiful to look at, and you can feel, you know, the money's up there on the screen, you know. So and I find parts of it to be quite moving. So. But it's not a perfect movie, but it's definitely not the horrible movie that it's had a reputation as being.
Yeah, well, even the people that hated it, and there were a great number that did, I think there was only one major critic in the country that actually gave it a positive review when it came out. But even the people that hated it, I mean, it's obviously a very beautiful-looking movie, a meticulously crafted movie.
I mean, let me ask you this. Are they going to include the documentary final cut on it, or no?
No, that's not in the extras that I read.
I read the book finally a couple years ago, and I really strongly recommend the book to anybody who's interested, not just in Heaven's Gate, but just about making movies and everything. It's a fascinating story.
Yeah, from what I see of it, I mean, I think it's a mistake because it completely ignores a piece of history for which Heaven's Gate is responsible.
Yeah.
You know, or
you can't talk
the culprit
about one without the other, I think. I think it's kind of hard. Not...
So it's going to whitewash that. It's going to pretend like, no, there wasn't any disastrous studio closing business with this movie.
There's no way they could do that. They're going to have to, you know, talk about it. I mean,
I don't see how, because it's such a vital part. As, like, I think Hearts of Darkness is a vital part of Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Apocalypse Now is a terrific film, but I mean, it's so kind of complemented by that documentary,
mm-hmm.
in a major way, and the Final Cut documentary is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Now, what was that done for? Well, that wasn't done for a theatrical release, though. It was done for television, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was done for, like, Ovation or some channel like that, some arts channel like that. Trio, maybe?
Trio, I think, is the one. Trio, because they did Easy Rider, Raging Bulls, I think.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Right.
It's good stuff. And actually, Dean, you and I were talking the other night about it. And it's in that documentary. What's interesting about it is that, you know, they blame the closing of the studio to Heaven's Gate, but Transamerica was a huge multi-billion-dollar company,
mm-hmm.
and Heaven's Gate, they wrote off that movie 2 days after it premiered in New York. It was not a loss for them. And
right.
when it opened poorly, their stock went down a half a point and then went right back up the next day. So, I mean, people paint this as some kind of disastrous... I think Heaven's Gate was the culprit to shut down or sell off that studio to MGM, you know?
Yeah. It was the scapegoat.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Think a conglomerate. I'm sorry. A movie, as expensive as they may be, even by today's standard, it's just conglomerates are so big. A movie is, I hate to say it, but it's a small write-off. For
mm-hmm.
a big, major global corporation. Let's be very honest there.
Well, and today, I mean,
I don't even think John Carter could destroy a corporation, okay? I mean,
they hedge their bets big time. I mean, they line up all the financing they need through foreign and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, by and large, they cover their ass.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, I guess. It's a risky business. Risky business, that made money, actually. Are there any other, like, underrated masterpieces, improperly maligned masterpieces out there?
Oh, God, that's a really great question. I don't know maligned, but there are movies that are considered duds that really I don't think are duds. And I'm not going to go ahead and, like, say The Exorcist 2 or something, obviously, no. But there are people that, I mean, let me put it to you like this. I'm not crazy about it, but Waterworld has its cult following. There are people that really like that movie a lot. And it's
I would
not
count that
it's
as
done.
One.
If,
I mean, it's not a masterpiece, but that's a really good one that you pointed out there.
Yeah, I mean, it has a following. You can't deny that. It actually was not as big a money loss as you would think. It actually, I think, did make money. Actually, it didn't make a profit.
Yeah, it did lose. It did lose a lot, certainly.
Yeah, but I mean, it gained stature in a weird way. And the movie you were talking about in the opening, Hudson Hawk, is not really. You know, that has its fan base too.
You know how I like Cobra.
Yeah.
And I see Cobra as, like, the pinnacle of Stallone's ego, and it shows up on the screen in a very delightful way for me.
Right.
I find the same thing with Hudson Hawk. I see Hudson Hawk, and I see Bruce Willis's ego flaunting about.
Right.
That's
a good analogy.
Yeah. I think that's excellent. That's very fitting. I would posit Showgirls as being
a good film.
I think that it's a masterpiece. I think that it's actually meant to be funny. I think it's meant to be over the top. I think that everything in there that a lot of people look at as it being a bad movie, like this movie's terrible, is actually it's just got to be. It just seems real to me. It seems like it really is. Paul Verhoeven sort of. Dragging us down into the cesspool that he views Las Vegas and the whole world around Las Vegas as being. You know, he looks at it as being a decadent American phenomenon, that city. And I think that the movie reflects the decadence that he feels that city exudes. And I think everything's put in there on purpose. And because some of it is just too funny, it's just too ridiculously funny to be just. I mean, it's got some skill behind it, you know.
Right.
Well, and
do we have a Showgirls tribute show in our future?
Oh,
the Verhoeven.
I think that would
trilogy.
Be a great show.
The Verhoeven series.
let me throw out some movies for you. I'm gonna look in.
look at James Robert Parrish's Fiasco book and just read. I'm going to read out some titles to you, okay? Popeye.
Oh yeah, I like that movie too.
Yeah.
Another movie that I think is unfairly maligned.
And another movie that's gained in stature over the years.
H-Star definitely has gained in stature, I think. Wouldn't you say?
Probably. I mean,
I think so.
Yeah. I don't know anyone that watches that movie and thinks that it's entirely successful, though, or thinks that it doesn't suffer some way once they go to the desert.
Exactly.
I agree with that.
That's exactly
what
right.
What about Town and Country?
yeah, that's one I haven't seen yet. So
okay, that movie took forever to come out. It's just not much of anything. I mean, it's just not.
No.
At least I didn't.
It really isn't. It is a major step back for. I mean, if you look at Bugsy, which is probably, I mean, arguably the finest acting work that Beatty's done. And then he does Town and Country, which is a Z-grade version of Shampoo. I mean,
it's not that good, Jamie. It's not even that good Z-grade.
I mean, why would you do a eighth generation carbon copy of Shampoo that isn't worthwhile?
Yeah, it's true.
What about Last Action Hero?
That movie gives me a headache. I can't take that movie.
It has some imagination in it.
It tries. In hindsight, it tries.
Yeah.
I like McTiernan. It's got moments of great imagination in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the fact that it's overblown is the point of it. But it's not as fun as it thinks it is. And again, I think most of these examples that you're bringing up go back to the ego thing. I mean,
right.
And you could say the same thing about Heaven's Gate, certainly. I mean,
yes.
It's ego run amok.
What about Havana?
I like Havana.
I don't think that's bad. I don't think
it's kind of a bore, though. It's a little bit of a bore, but...
Yeah.
It's nicely shot and everything.
It's pretty to look at. It's got good music. Lena Olin is hot.
Yeah. Those are all good things about it, for sure.
That makes any movie worthwhile. A hot Lena Olin. Put her in a movie.
Sometimes a movie is just good. Those kind of things will just keep you stringing along through it. You know.
Yeah. I mean, that movie exists. I mean, that's one of Sidney Pollack's, you know, movie star, power of the movie star movies. He just wants to capture Robert Redford looking lovingly into the eyes of Lena Olin and, you know, have chicks melt in the audience or something. I mean,
he did like 10 movies with Redford, so that might have been the last one that he did with Redford. I'm not quite sure about that. But.
What about The Cotton Club?
Now, that's a great example.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really terrific movie. And the only problem with that movie is that you can feel the... you can feel the interference of people in the editing room. That's one of those rare movies that, you know, if it was, you know, 10 or, I mean, maybe 20 or 30 minutes longer would actually be a whole hell of a lot better.
Right.
Because it just moves just a tiny bit too quickly at some point. Like they just frantically cut out scenes and just so
well,
they can sell popcorn.
I mean, they cut out 16 musical numbers from that movie.
Oh, right.
Including a big Stormy Weather, I think, was the song that they spent like $2 million alone just for that number. And I think it was a case of, I haven't gone back and seen The Cotton Club in decades.
Right.
But I think it was a case, according to Robert Evans, you know, there's Robert Evans' truth and Francis Ford Coppola's truth, and the real truth is probably in the middle. But according to Evans... Coppola intentionally sabotaged that movie out of disdain for Evans. I mean, who shoots a musical and then cuts out 16 of the musical numbers?
That's true.
You don't think we're going to hear, you know, Coppola going back and doing what he did with The Outsiders and trying to...
Coppola didn't give a shit about The Cotton Club. I mean,
I don't think
it was never his baby to begin
one
with.
One more title for you that is appropriate for... a big movie coming out in September, Battlefield Earth.
Oh, well, no, that's just a bad movie.
That movie sucks.
I don't think anybody likes that movie. Even connoisseurs of bad movies don't particularly care for that movie.
Even Scientologists don't like that movie.
Wasn't Cutthroat Island a big failure?
Oh, that was a huge
failure. Yeah,
that was a big failure.
Pluto Nash was a big failure.
Oh, yeah, I mean... These aren't even movies I would want to... I watch, like, on cable late at night or something, but these aren't movies that have any... They're just not good movies. I mean...
Well, they spent so much money on Pluto Nash. I mean...
I know. Where did it go? here's one. New York, New York. Scorsese, New York, New York.
Uh-huh.
That was also kind of a dud when it came out. But that's a movie that's actually grown in stature once they re-released it and restored some...
Do you like New York, New York, Jerry?
It's my favorite memory of that is on Saturday Night Live they did a spoof Escape from New York, New York. They had people trying to get out of the theater watching it. That was just as good as Brian De Palma's clams.
Geely.
Oh, there you go. What
Nobody
do we want to say about Geely?
I'm telling you, though. If Geely is on TV, I will watch it. I mean, I'll stick with it for a little while.
You mean
if
McCloud's
only...
not on or McMillan Life isn't on, you're going to...
Who the hell is programming Geely on television?
if only to see Christopher Walken's one scene. Because you think of the wild ways that he delivers dialogue, he's like completely over the top in Geely. He has one scene.
Mm.
And Jennifer Lopez looks at him and says, "Hi." And he looks down at her and looks at her really strangely for, like, a good 10 seconds. And he's like,
right.
"Hi." You know, it's, like, so weird. It's like he walked in from another planet, literally.
Here's another one. I've never seen this one, but Simone, remember that one?
Yeah. And the sad thing is that, you know, a lot of people, like, we're like myself, are looking forward to because of Gattaca, that other and you know, it was high hopes, and it just sort of, and also it had the unfortunate timing coming out, just, you know, because Winona Ryder's in it, and just while her whole shoplifting episode was going on, this comes out in the midst of that. And
I actually think that Geely and Simone have similar traits because they both have great potential. I mean, you could see there's seeds of something there that wasn't quite developed, and so it plays like a bit of a dull mess, the finished product. But you could see you could almost see the spark of what inspired it to begin with, you know. And Martin Brest is a talented writer. Certainly, Andrew Niccol is a talented writer. It's just a misfire, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, these are what's interesting about a lot of the movies. I think almost all the movies that we've talked about are all. If I'm not mistaken, big budgeted movies, especially for their time, expensive movies, and there are high hopes for all of them. Let me ask you this: were there high hopes for Battlefield Earth? I can't believe anyone who read the script.
I think they did that at the behest of John Travolta, and I think that movie had such a stench on it months before it opened that.
Nobody had any hope for it, yeah.
There's also The Postman.
Well, I went into that, you know, even though you had the War World thing and everything before that, it's based on such a very good book, and a very short book, I would like to add. And I was just kind of dumbfounded how he stretched it out and everything. I know I got to give him, in hindsight, credit for at least trying. But I tell you, like a quarter of the way into the movie, you're just like, there's nothing here. I mean, this is just dead as a doornail. This isn't going anywhere. And there's some interesting ideas in the movie, I think. But who I do think tries to do something is Will Patton.
Mm-hmm.
There's one scene where he gives a speech that's supposed that is supposed to have some heft, where he said before all this started, I mean, it's a lot like the Tina Turner speech in Beyond Thunderdome. I'm not going to lie to you. Before all this, I was just a copier repairman or something. And now look what I am. You know, and he's like the big boss, if you will, of this, like, you know, opposing army or whatever. But the movie, I think the movie just dies. I think mm-hmm. that's, you talk about someone's hubris, that's Costner once again.
Yeah.
Right there, so.
Well, I think that he's, I've always said this about Costner. I like the rascally Costner. I like
right,
the
yeah.
I like the Silverado 10 cup
mm-hmm.
Costner. He started to get, yeah, Bull Durham, perfect example. But from Bodyguard on, he started to take himself way too seriously, and
mm-hmm.
he started to play morose and brooding all the time, as if that was
yeah.
a substitute for depth. And he doesn't earn sincerity. It's everything's so mushy and saccharine. You know that he's dying to get that big movie moment. And he found it in Dances with Wolves because he had good material. But even in a otherwise really good film like Open Range, he's very unconvincing in it with his romance with Annette Bening. And he approaches
right.
Annette Bening and all of a sudden like professes his love to her. And it feels like it comes out of nowhere. And it's
right.
just, I want a big romantic movie moment that I didn't work enough to earn. But I want to put it in the movie, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Insincere, I
mm-hmm.
find him to be.
No, I agree. I actually appreciate, like, obviously movies like The Upside of Anger, even The Company
yes.
Man.
I
appreciate those roles. And I'd like to see him do more of that. Now, I didn't see Hatfields and McCoys. I heard he was very good in that. So I wouldn't mind checking that out. But
what about Speed Racer?
No, Speed Racer has the problem. I think Speed Racer has the problem. You talk about Costner taking it so seriously. It's taking they took it, I think, way too seriously. It should have, and it finds that humor or the comic book or whatever, the anime quality towards the end of the movie. But it's another one of those cases where, guys, it's a movie based on Speed Racer. You just want to really say, stop, put your pencils down. I mean, a friend of mine worked on it, and he was embarrassed by it.
Yeah, it's like getting like an Antonioni version of the Flintstones.
Yeah, that's a good, and I think that's the problem with those guys. Now,
which I'm
now the Wachowski brother and sister, not the brothers anymore, brother and sister. Their new movie is Cloud Atlas, and you talk
yeah.
about this is. In one sense, perfect material for them, but I don't know.
Again,
Matt, have you seen the preview for it?
No, I tried to read the book. I tried to read the book a couple, you know, tried to get into it because my brothers rave about the book. From like,
yeah.
I just found our copy. I tried to read it, and I was just like, you know what? No, I'm gonna have to come back to this later on.
I have not seen the trailer.
What is?
Yeah, they have a. An extremely long trailer. I mean, it's like 6 minutes long.
6 minutes?
And yeah, it's 6 minutes. I don't know exactly where it came from, but it does have subtitles on it, like a Asian subtitles on it. So it must have come from, you know, Japan or something. But whatever. And I'll tell you, that movie looks sort of like one of these movies we're talking about, where it's just. Way over the top, and
yeah, I think that actually,
gonna...
I mean, it looks like another incredible risk for them, but I think that's where they live. I don't know that they could do anything else but something like way outside the box that could really sink or swim. There's
right.
no in between.
Mm-hmm.
But Speed Racer lost $106 million was the net loss on Speed Racer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that hurts. But Sahara, the net loss in a movie like Sahara, $121 million.
That's weird. Like, where did all that money go on that? That's
well,
one of the movies
interesting.
I've seen.
Let me ask you guys a question. Do you think the author, Clive Cussler, like, didn't he sue them? Isn't there a lawsuit? Because it was dirt. He doesn't.
Oh, yeah, there was. There was.
I didn't think.
Right.
I did not think that was a bad movie. I think it was a great movie, but... I know that Dirk, you know, I read a couple of Clive Cussler books, the Dirk Pitt novels and everything, some of those. And, you know, Matthew McConaughey was not my first choice, but I did not think he did a bad job. I'm not saying it's a great movie or anything, but, I mean, it's kind of how you say it. It's like a Saturday afternoon movie. It goes
right.
It goes in one ear and out the other.
Why does that movie cost $240 million? I don't understand it.
Did someone have too much on a craft service?
There was probably a lot of cocaine on the craft service table. That's what I'm thinking. I've got two movies for this discussion. One that I think is a masterpiece, but it is much maligned, and that is 1941.
Yeah.
I agree with that. It gets better. It's funny.
It does. It's funny. It's like a suitable, like, it's one of that, it's part of that genre that I call the chaos movie, like, you know, kind of started with the Mad World, and I think that it does that chaos movie with juggling all of those characters and all of those different settings and so forth. Pretty well, and it's gorgeous to look at and listen to. And I don't really understand what kind of problem people had with that movie when it came out. I mean, I think it's perfectly funny in just most of the right places, and it's got some really incredible bravura scenes in it, like that whole scene with the dance the dance contest scene is just unbelievably well directed. You know.
I think once Belushi died, that movie had to be taken in a new, because you don't have that many Belushi movies to look at. So I think even something like that, you're like, wow, his performance, you know, he's not, what you're amazed at the first time you watch it is, wow, he's not in it that much. But when he is in it, he's just very funny. Little throwaway lines in that movie that are hysterical. And
that's what the movie is. I mean, it's a series of it's so much thrown into that movie that quite a bit of it seems to be throwaway, because it's a movie of everything but the kitchen sink. That's the kind of movie 1941 is. But you know what I think? I just think it was Spielberg's time to fall, because all of these 70s hit makers had their day, and it was around that period of time.
Right.
And that was Spielberg's turn, I guess, whether it was unfair
or not.
That's not
bad. That's
not bad, it's not bad, because, you know, I mean, Hook is a much worse movie
I agree with that.
Much worse. There's not one laugh in Hook, not one.
There's not one hook in Hook.
No, there was another one that I wanted to, like, bring up. Remember a few years ago, Richard Kelly came out with Southland Tales?
It's good. You know what the problem is? And I like Southland Tales. I get dirty looks for that, but I do like Southland Tales. I think Southland Tales is very bold. You know, you talk about throwing everything in but the kitchen sink. That's a perfect example. And I think Richard Kelly would have probably made 1941... I mean, that's a good analogy, because Southland Tales does have a lot in common with 1941.
It does, like, just
that's
a huge
very
cat.
Good. I was thinking that just as soon as you brought up 1941 about Southland Tales. Here's the thing that Southland Tales, actually, I think it was very good when it was released. I don't know if it will hold up, just because so much of the material in it is it's post 9/11, but in between, it is a movie that was tailor made for, like, the Bush presidency. And as we get further and further away from that, a lot of the jokes, I mean, even at the time, the jokes in it, you were like, already felt tired. But there's such a daring in the movie and just an expression of creativity. I can't hate the movie. He's trying. And I think in some ways it exceeds anything that he did in Donnie Darko.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I do, you know, because Donnie Darko is a pretty great movie. And
no,
it is
a great movie, but I think he goes even further. He takes stuff the whole time travel. He's obsessed with time travel.
Yes, he is.
All three movies, he is obsessed with time travel. I mean, I don't
even
know.
Even in the box?
There's an element. The box is just based on a great short story, And he takes it in places you're just like, oh my god, dude, what are you on?
I like the Bucks a lot. So would you choose Richard Kelly to do a remake of Back to the Future?
Yeah, I would choose to do the whole goddamn thing.
That'd be
thing.
Fascinating.
Yeah,
no,
that'd be fascinating.
Let me ask you a question. Now,
yeah.
You know, I don't see anything he's produced like World's Greatest Dad and I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell. Is he ever going to be allowed to direct again?
I think he's got a project, actually.
Okay, I would love to see them have one more shot.
Yeah.
I mean,
I have a hard time necessarily brushing someone off who, like you said, is trying. Somebody that's really bold and he's pushing himself. I mean, I feel the same way about Keanu Reeves as an actor. You know, he's not an actor of great range. But boy, he tries. I mean, he's in there and stuff that he has absolutely no business being in, and I admire that.
No,
you know?
But he's good in something.
True,
something's
he's
got
that good
give.
He's been good
I
before.
He was good
yeah.
in something's got to give.
That was a good performance. I really love him in Parenthood. I think
he's
terrific
in that.
And that's
supposed to be Bill and Ted's movie. I would welcome that. I would. It'd be very old, but yeah, I mean,
we got
the 47 Ronin.
Yeah, yeah, and that's been pushed back.
I knew you were going to say that as soon as I said
that's been pushed back three times now, and now it's been pushed back to December of next year. So it's over a year off, and I want to get to. We're talking about budgets being out of control and stuff. There was actually an interesting article in the LA Times this week about Paramount Pictures. I want to get into that, but let me. We have a call from San Antonio. I don't know if it's Aaron or who it. San Antonio, you're on the line.
Hello.
Hey there.
Hey.
Hey. Hey. Just like listening to all the talk, I was wondering, like, what's your favorite movie? But that just like considered, but it was like considered like bad, like out of ratings and all that. But like, what's your favorite movie that was just considered bad?
Wild at Heart and Cobra.
Well, Wild at Heart
was the
first one.
Considered a bad movie.
The Wild at Heart
the first one.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people despise Wild at Heart. With the.
I mean, it won at Cannes Film Festival, so it's
well, that's all the proof you need. It's a horrible movie.
I don't know. I think my favorite bad movie is probably Showgirls. Other than, you know, of course, the obvious, like, you know, Plan 9 from Outer Space or whatever. But I think Showgirls is it for me.
I think the two for me, one we talked about, Southland Tales. The other one I'm going to, and I'm always crucified for this, is Australia.
I don't mind Australia.
People hate that movie. People hate that movie. Although I get shit for liking The Dark Knight Rises. I'm kidding. Oh, you know another movie they hate me for loving? Savage.
What's
that? Savages. Oh. I get like rained on all the time for because I like that movie a lot.
Why?
People don't like it. They don't like Savages. I'm looking at it as a way to survive if Romney becomes president. I'm looking at it for like
a
10-point plan.
If nothing else, you get to see Salma Hayek, and that's enough of a reason to see any movie.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. What about you, dude? What are some of your favorites that nobody else seems to like?
I gotta say, Jumper.
Oh, Jumper. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jumper,
right.
I can see that.
I haven't seen that, but I'd like to check that out.
But I liked it, but everyone said like it sucked. Like, yeah, no point. But I don't know. I just thought it was pretty good. That one and Daredevil. The spin-off.
Daredevil.
You know
they're getting ready to reboot that, aren't they?
It's been canceled.
Oh, Daredevil was great, but I didn't think it was bad. I think the director's cut is supposedly that they released on DVD is supposed to be very good. I heard from some people. So,
Carnahan, Joe Carnahan was supposed to direct the Daredevil movie, and they pulled the plug on him. So.
Man, after The Gray, I'd let him do whatever he wanted, man.
That would have been
Daredevil. I thought it was another director. Like, it was like Dave Goddard. his name was.
That directed it?
Yeah, I thought that was supposed to be the one that was going to direct Daredevil, the new one.
Oh, no, it came out. I mean, it was Carnahan, because, I mean, it just happened yesterday that they said the Carnahan Daredevil isn't happening. So it's like hot off the presses, man.
Damn.
Yeah. I appreciate you calling, buddy. I appreciate
you
listening
in,
too.
Thank you for calling.
All right, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you, buddy. Bye-bye, man.
All right.
Okay. Man, we've had good callers lately. Oh.
What's going on in the news? What did you guys? Let me ask you guys this.
I told you I was gonna. I was moving from one topic to another because they fit together.
Yeah. Paramount. The thing about Paramount.
Paramount. Paranormal Activity 4 is the only movie they have out for the rest of the year now.
Yeah, they've had a pretty bad year, haven't they?
And really by no fault of their own necessarily, because all of their Christmas product has been pushed back, including World War Z. World War Z is the one out of control production they have going. But what makes Paramount a special case, and what other studios are trying to learn from Paramount, is in the past few years under Brad Gray, they have become extremely cost efficient. They have cut their cost by $300 million every year, and they do that a lot by they've cut down the number of films that they make every year. I mean, they make less films than any other major studio in Hollywood. But outside of that, they defer a lot of salaries and stuff. I mean, they keep costs low on their productions by and large. But they're in an intermission now. But they scored some major hits.
They didn't have anything this summer except for that Katy Perry concert movie, I think. That's what I remember reading, at least. It was like they had no summer slate.
Well, this is not as new as you would think. I remember when in the Christmas of 1990, that season, they only had Godfather Part 3 and Almost an Angel. But they were resting everything on Godfather 3 that year. They really were like putting all their eggs in that basket.
Well, I remember the same thing with 95. The only Christmas holiday release Paramount had was Leap of Faith, I think.
Oh, wow. Right, yeah. 93. Yeah, I think, was that like 92 or 93 or something? Or
yeah, it's probably one of those years.
Yeah.
But
that's,
I personally think that's an underrated movie, actually.
That is a
great
I love
that movie. I love that movie.
But it ain't like box
movie.
Office gold on Christmas Day. It ain't that kind of movie.
No. But that's a movie that deserves to be rediscovered, because Steve Martin's great in it. So is Deborah Winger. And that's a terrific movie.
Yeah, I think so, too. Hey. So Scorsese is just about to shoot, or September. He starts shooting this Wolf of Wall Street movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in 3D. Robert Richardson is not shooting it for him. I don't know why. But it has a big cast that continues to grow. I mean, Leonardo, Jonah Hill, Matthew McConaughey just signed up for it. Rob Reiner, like a bunch of really interesting actors. But he's actually made movement on his Sinatra movie. He's brought in another writer to do another draft of his Sinatra movie. So, if that could possibly be his next movie, is that an idea that excites you?
Well, I'm a little wary of it because I'm sure he'll find somebody to play Sinatra, but if he's going to cast Leonardo DiCaprio with Sinatra, I'm sorry, that's not going to work for me. I'm never going to be able to believe that.
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
You don't believe him as somebody that could get a lot of women?
Who would you get to play Sinatra? Who would you get to...
I don't know. I'd go with Giovanni Ribisi.
I'd go with Chaz Palminteri.
Bad, I'm sorry.
I don't know who could play Sinatra. It'd be wise for them to just go with an unknown who can actually sing.
Yeah, no, that would be.
But I don't have any suggestions.
The first draft was by Phil Alden Robinson. The second draft is being written by Billy Ray. And I love Shattered Glass. I love Breach. So
yeah,
I like
yeah,
Billy Ray
a
lot.
Those are great movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sinatra, I mean, the mind kind of wonders at the supporting cast of Sinatra. I mean, you got some great, you know, Dino, you know, the other Dino, Dean.
Yeah, JFK, you know.
Yeah, JFK, Sammy, you know, all that crew.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And I know when this project was first announced, like, oh, my gosh, probably a decade ago. I mean, this has been on his radar for a long time. They had the cast, like, drawn out. I mean, they had Tom Hanks as Dean Martin and... They had a whole bunch of people
yeah.
set for it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was good casting, by the way, Tom Hanks as Dean Martin. I thought that
that really is good. I agree with that.
You know, the thing about it, if you're going to make a movie about Sinatra, the most interesting, I mean, he's had a lot of interesting parts of his career, no question about it, obviously, but I think the best one, the part of his career that has the most sort of interesting story to it is the part where he was, you know, considered box office poison and he wasn't being considered for any movie roles, you know, that whole thing that the thing in The Godfather is about. His fight to get into From Here to Eternity.
Right.
But if you, which of course won him the Oscar that year for supporting actor and rejuvenated his movie career, if you're going to do that part of the story, again, you're going to have to get somebody who's, you know, I mean, he always looked sort of boyish in that period.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think that, you know, I mean, if you're going to get DiCaprio in there, it's just not going to work.
Gosling
might be a
choice.
Good choice.
I just came up with that at the top of my head, just the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah.
Well, you're brilliant, man.
No, I'm not.
I thought the most interesting period of time in Sinatra's life was when he had lots of people killed. But actually, going
well,
on that track.
Well, that was
all
through it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, I like whenever he was on The Tonight Show and Don Rickles would come on.
Yes, yes. Carlo Bambini has a message.
Yes, yes, that's exactly.
Exactly, yeah. You know what, though? That brings up a good point, because the Sinatra estate, what's her name, Barbara, his widow or something, they're behind the movie. So how good can it be?
You bring up a very good point there, Jamie. That means if they're behind it, there can't be anything unflattering in it.
My guess is, I bet, you know, because he has, Scorsese has a, sort of, to me, has a reputation of, you know, saying he's going to do something and it looks like it's going to happen and it never happens, like, for instance, especially with these music projects, like he was going to do the Gershwin Brothers back in the mid-90s, that never happened, they were working on scripts. I have a feeling that this is going to be the script to nowhere, where it's just not going to get made.
Like that bridge to nowhere.
Could be. I mean, it could
you
be.
Know
he's
what
got
I mean?
A lot of those in his drawer. But the one,
mm-hmm.
as I've always said, since they first announced it a couple of years ago, the one that I want him to make is The Irishman. He will.
Yes.
He would return with Robert De Niro, but more important than that, he would work with Al Pacino for the very first time. And I can't think of a better freaking pairing. Why hasn't Pacino and Scorsese done a movie together yet? Why haven't
I don't know. That's a mystery. It's a mystery. And you know, I think everybody's kind of chomping at the bit for him to return to do kind of a gangster thing like that, you know, with those old-timer gangsters, you know. There was Jack Nicholson and The Departed, but that was the least appealing aspect of that movie. I think people want him to go back to that.
Actually, I agree with that. The least appealing part of The Departed was Nicholson, and it was very exciting, like the thought of Nicholson working with Scorsese. But I could tell that Nicholson wasn't given any boundaries. I mean, he wasn't in the ring. You know, he wasn't in those four corners. He was like wandering around the field, and it just
right.
wasn't a consistent kind of performance.
Well,
I think
like
that I think that his first choice of Mel Gibson in that role would probably have been much more interesting.
I would have been. That would have. You know, the more you think about it, when that came out, and also you watch something like Edge of Darkness or something, you're like, wow, there might have been something there. Now, that's not to say I think The Departed is a very good movie, but not so much because of Nicholson, really, because of everyone around Nicholson,
mm-hmm.
Ray Winstone,
yeah.
DiCaprio, Damon. Wahlberg.
The weak link in it.
and when you first heard about it, that was not the first. You would think, wow, okay.
Finally, yeah.
Honest.
What a great
yeah.
playing a bad guy, playing a psychotic.
Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
yeah.
Now this fall, if we're looking at the major Oscar contenders, I mean there are several. I mean there's P.T. Anderson's film. There's Lincoln. And we'll talk more about Lincoln in a little bit. But there's also Kathryn Bigelow's film, Zero Dark Thirty. And they released the teaser for that last week.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, let me say, the title Zero Dark Thirty, it sounds like the name of a beer. But outside of that...
I love that, by the way. I have an ancillary joke for that. The little tagline for the beer could be, it's Osama Bin Lager.
I like that.
When
that's
you're
good.
Done, I have a question
good,
about
man.
This movie.
Hey, God, Jerry, I'm not done laughing.
Okay. No, it's good. It was very funny. No, I liked it.
Go ahead, Jerry.
This movie has a lot of baggage, and not in a good way either. I don't know if the public will be that interested when it comes out. But also, just all the leaks, they claim that classified information was shared with the people making the movie, and that's, you know, caused a shitstorm, if you will. And
to the point where they had to push the movie back, you know, after the after its release, after the had to push it back to December so it wouldn't interfere with the election and so forth.
Well, let me ask you this: do you think Lincoln? You know, Lincoln...
Well, first of all, hold that thought about Lincoln, because I'm going to ask you a question related to what you just said.
Okay.
Nobody cared about The Hurt Locker either. I mean, nobody went to go see it.
It's a great movie and everything, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a reflection on the quality of the movie, but do you think that this added kind of conspiracy feel and controversy with Zero Dark Thirty would actually increase interest in it, if anything?
No.
No?
I don't. I think people... how do I say this? I mean, even though it's a very important story, it's not even just so much that. That's a big deal in one sense, depending whose side, you know, you look at. But there's also this whole thing now, the SEAL team is now saying that Obama has exploited this, you know, for election gains, which is BS, because the other side, no one had a problem when the other side was doing this many years ago. There's just so much baggage coming with this film in one sense, by the way, which means absolutely nothing outside the Beltway.
Mm-hmm.
Everything like with these movies, mind you, Fair Game, and they're good movies, outside the Beltway, no one gives a damn.
Aren't people a little burned out on just hearing about Iraq just in general
Afghanistan
and
I think, it's the biggest story this week is that you know, like once again, and Jamie, I'll shut up after this about this, but Leon Panetta just saying that neither side is talking about Afghanistan. We still have a war going on, but no one's talking. No one is there to talk about this on the campaign trail. And I think that says it all.
In terms of movies, they've never cared.
No, they don't.
But
he's had some good movies made about the subject.
Absolutely,
too,
absolutely. But The Hurt Locker, no one viewed The Hurt Locker as a politicized movie. People are going to view, I think, where you're right about this controversy is, people are going to view Zero Dark Thirty as a politicized movie before it even sees the light of day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's divisive.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, knowing how Kathryn Bigelow, though, I mean, she never really put a lot of politics into her movies. Her movies are pretty much visceral.
Yeah, they're adrenaline.
Visceral
the
entertainment.
Adrenaline junkies.
Yeah, they are. And I bet when the movie finally comes out, and people see it for what it really is, there'll be a lot you know, all that talk about political things will just be shut down.
Right. I agree with that.
You know.
Is it going to be Point Break in Afghanistan? Is that
But yeah. I just don't think people are that interested in the material. I think especially it's been a year, well over a year since he was killed. People just don't care. They never did. There were movies we thought about the war that would do well. Never. Never.
Well,
they never do.
That,
that's true.
But I still think that it'll get Oscar.
Oh yeah,
if it's good.
I think it would have to be. I don't see it being a bad. I don't think. Let me put it to you like this. I don't think it's going to be a poorly made film. I think if anything, she is for the most part a very reliable, very capable director. She knows how to make an entertaining film.
Let me ask about this, and then we'll talk a little bit about Lincoln since we're on the topic of Oscars. Jimmy Fallon turned down hosting the next Oscars. Or I don't know that he turned it down. I think he was turned down for it.
Oh, okay.
I think it's because he's an NBC talk show host, late night talk show host, and the Oscars are ABC's baby, and they don't necessarily want to promote another network as, you know, the biggest night of their ratings year. And then I think in turn, after that occurred, Lorne Michaels bowed out of producing it. So they're without producer and host now.
Mm.
And Lorne Michaels producing was actually like an exciting notion to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I could see, definitely.
I just wanted to throw that out there.
No,
I have no idea.
Jimmy Kimmel?
No, nobody.
No, I just threw it out there. Not as a precedent. Who would you get to host it then?
Shit, I'd go with Craig Ferguson before I went with Jimmy Kimmel.
You know why they might go for Jimmy Kimmel? Because he makes it a point to do like an after Oscar special every year, and he does these mock movies just like they play at the beginning of every Oscar ceremony with like every single star you can imagine.
Right.
Like, the people of Hollywood love Jimmy Kimmel.
Okay, well, that could work. I mean, that's not so far out there. Craig Ferguson is a good choice, too. But I would have been curious to see Jimmy Fallon try it.
Yeah.
I have still yet to watch even one episode of that show because I've never been enamored of Jimmy Fallon. Like, I always, you know, he always irritated me on SNL because he would be the one guy that would break, you know, and start laughing.
He's the worst interviewer ever, essentially. he really is.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know,
oh, God,
I hope
we don't get him on the show. He was probably going to listen to one episode he'll listen to.
I mean, he's not a very good interviewer, though. You're right. I mean,
he'll just sit there with the guest, and he's like, oh, God, that's just amazing. That's amazing. That's his interview technique.
Yeah, it's true. You know, right now I'm reading, I don't know if you guys have read this book. It's really interesting. It's called The Big Show. It's by Steve Pond, and it's all about the actual Oscar shows, you know,
all the
work
cool.
that went into each one of them. And it starts off in the mid-90s and works its way up to, I think, you know, 2005 or something like that. So it goes through the machinations of what it takes to produce each one of the shows. It's a pretty interesting book, you know. It's kind of got like a little bit of a gossipy kind of thing to it, which is usually like not my deal, but I like that they focus all the gossip on just what was going on behind stage and so forth. And it's really funny when you read all the passages about they're waiting for the nominations, you know, to because the nominations frame what the show's going to be like, and especially they wait for the best song nominations to come out because that gives them the ideas of what's going to be a big number in the show or whatever. It's always funny, you know, for me reading about these terrible songs that are nominated almost every year that absolutely nobody remembers, like that song from Beethoven Second or whatever. You know, stuff like that, you know. It's like, oh man, it must be so tough for them to get excited about that stuff.
I was reading an interview, I was watching an interview with Friedkin because he's on every single outlet known to man for Killer Joe. He really has. But he, I think it was Movie City News, and he was talking about the one year that he produced the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that year that he did that, he called Stanley Kubrick, and he said, I would love, it would be a tremendous honor if you would fly down and present Best Director. And he said that Kubrick wanted to do it, but he just couldn't bring himself to because he was so petrified of flying.
Oh.
Wow.
Wouldn't that have been like one of those great Oscar moments? That would have been a great Oscar moment. Yeah.
That would have been like, imagine Stanley Kubrick and Terrence Malick do a joint appearance.
Yeah. You'd have better luck trying to get Stanley Kubrick to appear now than Terrence Malick.
Terrence Malick and Michael Cimino present the best.
Even though, you know what, Malick has been photographed a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are new photographs I just saw today of him on set.
Yeah, uh-huh. I saw someone with him, like, wearing some crazy... crazy straw hat.
Maybe. I mean, I think Tree of Life got such a great critical reception, probably of all of his movies, maybe even more so than The Thin Red Line. Of all the three, you want to say recent movies, Tree of Life might have gotten him a whole new fan base.
Well, and Tree of Life, actually, I mean, there's probably some justification for what you just said, because my understanding is, on the Sight and Sound list, Tree of Life came in 101st, so it just missed the 100 greatest films of all time.
Yeah. I think, he must be a little heartened. There must be something about him, if you could talk to him in, a private moment, he'd probably say, I wonder if he would go, I'm really glad that people responded to it,
Or maybe he's like Woody Allen and he doesn't give a shit. It's great that they like it, but that doesn't matter to me. It's either way. Daniel Day-Lewis is Lincoln. They released like the official photo the other week, and he looks pretty astounding.
That's
agreed?
Some astounding makeup. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I have no problem with that. I mean, I think he's obvious. Is he the front runner for Best Actor? Are we just going to go on that assumption?
From what I'm hearing people say, nobody's seen his performance yet, but, you can imagine that he's great. I mean, it's like saying that Meryl Streep looks great in that movie. Well, yeah, she's Meryl Streep. But from what I hear, I mean, a lot of people are talking about Joaquin being the big competition for him.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, I see that. It seems like he has that part in the movie.
He's got that Giovanni Ribisi role.
Yeah.
That twitchy weirdo vibe.
One thing about The Master, and I'm still keeping this to Lincoln, but one thing that I've heard about The Master is that it's a little obscure.
Mm-hmm.
That it might not be the kind of movie that's in the Oscar wheelhouse, necessarily.
They say it's very similar in tone to There Will Be Blood. But There Will Be Blood got the Oscar love, obviously, for Daniel Day-Lewis. So could it do the same thing for Joaquin? I mean, I don't know.
It could.
I think there's something about, he has not made a bad film yet, Paul Thomas Anderson. Nothing close to what you would call a bad movie. So.
My thing about Lincoln is, I think if Lincoln comes out and it's sort of like just good but not great, not out of this world great, that instantly kills Daniel Day-Lewis' chances of winning, because they're not going to give him a third Oscar unless it's not just a great performance, but a great movie.
Well, we can say that, but Meryl Streep won for The Iron Lady last year.
Well,
and that's not a great movie.
But that's only because she had already gone down in the list as the biggest Oscar loser of all time. So they kind of wanted to balance that out a little bit.
It could be, but they're also, extreme similarities too. I mean, playing a real life figure, looking amazingly like them, inhabiting them. Yeah. Even though I don't know anyone personally that has met Lincoln.
Yeah.
The only difference is, you know, that Iron Lady had that that director that who directed Mamma Mia or whatever. That was the only other thing she ever done.
The Little
Lloyd,
yeah.
That's a little different.
Well, what did you want to ask me about Lincoln? What did you want to ask me about?
Oh, I just said that because you were about to talk about Lincoln. I said, let me get to that in just a second.
Oh, okay.
And we just got to it.
Okay.
Anyway, so do you guys have any movies that you'd recommend that you've seen in the past week or so?
I really like The Bourne Legacy.
Oh, you did like it?
I did. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good way to... If you're not going to have Matt Damon in this one, this was the best way to do it. So you have a story that is like going on concurrently with the end of The Bourne Ultimatum. And... it's fascinating. I hope they'll make another one. I hope they make another one that Matt, because they do. Matt Damon can come back anytime he wants, and it'd be interesting to see that.
There's talk that he'll do that for the next one.
I think they should do it. But it's a great. It's just a really awesome, I think, thriller and everything. Just really well made. Tony, and I think the comparison. You know, a lot of people say, oh well, Tony Gilroy is no Paul Greengrass. Well, duh, of course not. But you know, they have to give Tony Gilroy was the one who wrote all them and wrote the first one, The Bourne Identity, and and made it into, you know, he took all the Cold War stuff, all the stuff that was dated from the books and the Robert, and updated it for the 21st century for now, and I think he does a fine job. I mean, he's a really good director. I mean, Michael Clayton, even Duplicity, for that matter. I mean, so I think it's a really good movie. I really enjoyed it.
Okay. Thumbs up from Jerry. I'm going to go see Expendables 2 this weekend, by the way.
That's what I want to see. That's the next thing I want to see.
I can't not see it. It pulls me.
You can't keep yourself away from it.
Like the allure,
crazy.
Like the allure of a peanut butter Twix bar. It's like pulling me in. It's can't avoid it. It's junk food. It's cinematic junk food. I need my fix.
You know, this weekend also sees the release, I think it's a wide release, of Compliance, that Craig Noble movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the movie that I would recommend people go out and check out.
I want to see that. I definitely want to check that out.
That movie is blow-away good. Definitely an original screenplay Oscar nomination for that movie.
It's one of the best it's one of the best reviewed and received movies so far this year. And, I mean, and actually, it's really... catapulted him into the big time because he's already doing his next movie, Tobey Maguire. It's like a big studio movie.
Right.
Okay.
So I mean, whether that's big time or not, I don't know in terms of quality if it will be, but Compliance is being raved about. And it's screening. I mean, they've been doing promotional screenings for it the past week or two where Craig Zobel has been present, and the audiences have been very, very testy. There have been a lot of confrontations with Zobel after the screenings. They've been very volatile. So it's getting people riled up.
Well, when I saw it at the Atlanta Film Festival this past spring, he was there, and there was not a reaction like that. I mean, it wasn't a full packed house or whatever, but there was a good, you know, 120 people there or something. But... People were excited to talk about the movie afterwards, no question about it. But there was no sense that I understand that some people think that he's, you know, manipulating people or whatever with the film. But the film is about manipulation. So how are you not going to do that? You know, how are you not going to tell the story without manipulating your audience a little bit? You know,
I don't like that argument to begin with. I mean, does that mean you dismiss every single movie Hitchcock ever made? I mean,
talking
about the master manipulator. A single cut, a single edit is manipulation because you're manipulating the point of view. I mean, movies are manipulation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
without
a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And interviewed him early on. He's the fact. That was a great interview.
Great Wall of Sound, which is a movie I like. Yeah,
it was good. That's a really good movie. I mean. Really good film.
Well, last night I watched a couple of nights ago. I watched the remake of Fright Night with Colin Farrell in it, And I have to say, I really had a good time watching that movie. I thought it was,
yeah, that's a
you
fun
know,
movie. Yeah,
it's one of those movies that's actually a little bit better than the original, if you ask me. So,
what's he do? What's he do at the end? He like pulls out the pipe of the house or something? Or?
Oh, the gas line. He like.
Well, he cuts the gas line and blows the house up, basically, which was great. I thought it worked.
Insurance.
Yeah, but I really like the cast in it. Although I have to say, the female lead in it is she was beautiful and good in the movie and everything. But her name is Imogen Poots. Yes. Whatever happened to you know?
Well, that explains why he cut the gas line.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to like? You know, when people get into the film business, you know, and they have an unfortunate name like Imogen Poots, what would happen to those you know, managers that would say, we got to change your name to Marilyn Monroe or something like that, you know, because, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
There needs to be, what happened to those names, you know,
I didn't see anything new this past week, but I was telling Dean this the other night. I actually rewatched that Farrelly Brothers movie, Stuck on You. And I gotta tell you, I mean, that's one of those movies that everybody kind of scoffs at, or some people scoff at, but I think it's their best movie, actually. I think it's the one with the most pathos. It's a typical Farrelly Brothers movie in that it's like an outrageous premise, but the chemistry between the two of those leads is very special, and it surprises you, like it just sneaks up on you.
It's
I've always had a great effect.
Good nature. Good nature.
It's good
thought.
Nature.
It had a lot of
yes.
heart. A lot of heart to it, I always thought. So.
Yeah, it really did. So
I've always
I
been impressed with their movies, you know, their ability to have, you know, a lot of laughs in their movies, no question. But they also have a lot of humanity in their movies.
Yeah.
And I always appreciated that about them.
You know, I want to talk about one other thing real quick before we close off. And we have a special film score to close off with tonight. But there was a site, and I can't find it. I thought I bookmarked it, but I didn't. There's a site that had, like, the top nine movies, the top nine greatest movies you've never seen because they were never released. One of them was, what is it? Dark Star or Dark Blood, which is the River Phoenix thing that's about to be released.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah,
the thing
yeah,
by
yeah.
George Sluvier or whatever. Right.
Yeah, it was. The list was inspired by that. But a couple of titles, and I'll find the list for a future show because they're all interesting. But a couple of titles, there's the Orson Welles' The Other Side of the Wind with John Huston.
Yeah.
And there's the Johnny Depp movie. With that he did with Marlon Brando, where Johnny Depp directed it. It's the only movie he directed, and he stars in it as a guy that's willing to be killed off in a snuff film to leave money for his family. And Marlon Brando plays this Indian porno smut producer, snuff producer, with a long ponytail.
I've seen that. It's called The Brave. I've seen that. I saw it on I guess a bootleg a long time ago. You know, cause
yeah,
I
it's available on bootleg. It's available on bootleg. I mean, if you want to watch it, looking like you're wearing a panty on your head. I mean, it's available out there. But
it looks good. I mean, it looks okay. Not a great movie though.
It played at Cannes, and it got mildly enthusiastic response. I wonder why he pulled it. I mean, I wonder why he made sure it didn't see the light of day necessarily.
I don't know. I don't know either. I mean, maybe it hurt his ego. You know, you got to figure he's got somewhat of a sizable ego by this time. So maybe he just doesn't want to make fun of it.
I mean, just for prosperity, just for posterity, whatever that word is,
yeah,
just for that,
yeah.
Like Brando's in it.
Yeah, I don't. You know. I guess, you know, that's the only explanation is that, you know, he's embarrassed by the movie and he doesn't want anybody to see it.
I mean, they released Brando playing the Chinese guy. That movie's available. Why not release, The Brave?
You could have watched it. There was a multi-region DVD subscription service a couple of years ago.
called Netflix, where you could like rent, like, you know, different regions. You know, if you had a multi-region player, you could rent the Brave.
Oh.
But I think that went bust a couple of years ago. But I know you can definitely order it. You know, if you have a multi-region player, you can definitely order it from anywhere.
I would be surprised if somebody's downloaded it on in like 10 parts on YouTube someplace.
YouTube
so.
Or any torrent site for that matter. I mean, I'm sure it's on there.
I'm almost going
to bet it's on BitTorrent or anything. I'm sure it is.
Yeah. I only get my porn from BitTorrent. I'm not gonna get like a legitimate film there. All right, so let's come back Sunday night and do what we do.
Okay.
All right.
That sounds good to me.
I got some, you know what? You know what email I got today? I got an email that said, Kurt Russell is doing phone interviews. Let me know if you're interested. And I was like, oh, shit. It's like, shit, yes. I'd love to have Kurt Russell on the show. So he said, okay, I'll put you on the list and I'll let you know. I don't know if we'll get it or not, but we're on the list
anyway.
What
movie, out of curiosity, what?
It's some movie, some football movie that's coming to Blu-ray in September. But the thing that makes Kurt Russell so damn hard to get as a guest, he doesn't have a manager or a publicist. He never has. So it's actually very hard for filmmakers to find him, to like track him down if they're interested in having him in their movies.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That is. Yeah, I did not know that. Okay.
Okay. Our closing song tonight, our closing theme tonight is from a newly remastered issue of John Carpenter's Assault on Precinct 13 score.
Oh,
well, neat. Which he wrote.
Yes,
one
of course.
Scores, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
It's,
okay.
It's one of his classic two-note scores, and we're about to hear it.
I love those scores. They give me the chills. And that movie kind of gives me the chills, too. That movie has one of the most shocking deaths ever in the history of movies. Yeah,
it's a good movie.
Yeah. It's really good.
His style is like film score as electrocardiogram or something. It's like just... All right.
I always thought it was funny when Ennio Morricone did the score for The Thing and it ended up sounding exactly like Jack Carpenter. Like, why would you do that?
Let me hire the greatest composer of all time to write one of my scores.
I know, really.
Ennio, could you make this sound more like John Carpenter?
What? Like, exactly like John Carpenter?
Why the hell did you hire me?
Enough of that pan flute. Could you give me some John Carpenter?
The pan flute. There's always the pan flute in one of his scores. It's always.
Yeah. All right. So we close off with this.
Assault Precinct 13.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
All right. See you later.
Oh, wait a minute. No, that's not it.
What?
I pushed the wrong button. Sorry.
That was pretty funny.
All right. This is it for real this time. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
All right. See you later.